Hello everyone, welcome to our weekly chat with weekly fireside chat perhaps. And we're going to be talking today about inflation and this is slowing down of inflation, and actually a recurring theme this week, which is U-turns. Let's sort of jump into it. So first of all, I mean, I think that it looks like there are some early signs of inflation actually slowing down. I mean, we've seen, especially UK and the US have been relatively early in terms of addressing the problem of rising inflation. And it looks like things are potentially slowing down. One of the things that came out over the week there was some quite interesting news flow on ships that were, you know, sea containers and things. Freight rates are coming down. In fact, they're coming down to such an extent that we are now seeing, and the demand is falling, so we are now seeing sailings actually being cancelled, which 3-6 months ago was unthinkable. So all of these things, it shows that demand seems to be slowing down. I think it would be fair to say that China, which is usually a very reliable place where you can see things growth, growth isn't really coming from China either. So it does look like things seem to be slowing down, and maybe all those interest rate rises that we saw happening from the end of last year and the beginning of this, maybe they are not now starting to kick in. But what do you reckon, Ralph?
Yes, I have also noticed that apparently inflation is falling off its peak rates a little bit. And that is in itself, of course, good news. Whether it is in response to the specific interest rate rises we've seen, or just simply because demand is slowing down, is at this stage, I don't think, easy to ascertain from the data which are at our disposal. Because this is always an issue, isn't it? Demand is slowing down. The fact that ships are now running empty containers is not in itself a good thing. It is clearly good because inflation might actually drop a little bit, but obviously we're also not going to get any commodities or any goods, which we can't buy anyway because we haven't got any money. So I mean, basically, we are. This is not nothing new. We are in the beginnings of a, I think, sustained downturn in the economy, not just in the UK, but worldwide. But yes, to focus on the good news in isolation, you can see that inflation is dropping off from its peak rates. To put this perhaps into a slightly wider context, when you look at the 2 or 3 year projections done, I think, by the Bank of England, from what I've seen, is that they are basically projecting inflation to peak at around now in several months, and then to ease off their all-time highs until 2024, 2025, they will have reached a considerably lower level again. Now, if that was the case, if this projection were to actually become reality, then that is a little glimpse of a light at the end of the tunnel. Because obviously, what happens is, as inflation is rising, stock markets are falling, and maybe we can do an entire podcast on the technicalities of that. It's just simply because share prices are discounted at higher rates. But equally, as the markets are looking through, let's say as we get to the end of 2023, and they're looking through into the middle of 2024, on lower inflation, then you should actually expect that an easing of inflation should coincide with a gradual recovery in the equity markets. And yet, yes, that is all 2 years away, if the Bank of England is right. Nevertheless, that is something which, again, in isolation, not talking about any developments in the geopolitical framework, is positive. So let's focus on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, with the slew of negative news flow, you know, it's always quite nice to see at least a tiny nugget of positivity there. But, you know, I mean, some of the reason for that fall in freight rates is the general kind of pessimism over the economy. The higher prices are kicking in. They're kicking in, and it's all adding together to get to a slowdown. But I mean, the thing is, I suppose it's very difficult for central banks to get it right. They're usually lagging indicators, I think. And it's very easy to go too much one way. So presumably we will see interest rates going a bit higher than what they actually should do. Yes. But then they'll come back again.
If we're spinning a positive, if you're putting a positive spin on this, then obviously as the equity markets were to increase, or it goes slightly differently, doesn't it? I mean, as inflation might start to ease, and we're seeing rate levels which are comparable to, well, pre-Ukrainian war, let's say, at the end of 2024. As this happens, then, of course, the pressure to increase interest rates even further is easing too. And then the Bank of England might start putting through lower interest rates, which would then feed into lower mortgage costs, which would feed into people having a little bit more money at a time that inflation is reducing. And then you see a slow virtuous circle starting potentially. At the moment, and this is the one drop of bitterness in all of this, the UK is a special economy because households have more debt, because the percentage of ownership of property is higher than typically that which you find in continental economies. And because of that, what you have is part of the basket, part of one definition of the consumer basket is mortgages. And if you look at that basket, then obviously if you use that as a measuring tool for inflation, that will ease off very gradually only, because increases in interest rates, which are meant to fight inflation, are obviously increasing the mortgage cost, which is part of that particular basket to measure inflation. But so the UK is a bit, little bit more difficult perhaps than Germany, Italy, and France. But certainly, I think let's focus on a potential good news on the horizon, even though the horizon may be 2024.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's better. I mean, it could be worse. We could be in Turkey, where the inflation rate is 83%. Erdogan continues to plow his own furrow and saying that he believes that he's one of the only people in the world that believes that actually cutting rates is the right thing to do in the face of rising inflation. And that's not working out very well for him.
In fact, believe is precisely the operative word in this sentence. You know, I'm sure the people in Turkey are wishing that Erdogan would make a U-turn.
And
wasn't that a great...
That was a brilliant link there. Into not rehearsed at all. So that was very good. So yes, which brings us nicely to the next part of what we're going to say, which is about this being a week of U-turns. So which U-turn did you like the most this week then?
I liked them all. I did like the...
We all like a good U-turn, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I like a good U-turn like the next guy. I like the quasi-cutting U-turn, the reversal of the cutting of the top rate of tax. This is actually hard to say even intellectually, because somebody was cutting it and now they're reversing the cutting, which means we're back where we used to be. And anyway, so the reason that I found that interesting is, well, there are many reasons for this. First of all, that the government is, in fact, after all, one needs to assume, paying attention to some of the stuff which is going on around them, which it didn't look like there were when I saw this mini budget being announced first. And what is going around them is, of course, market turmoil. And interestingly, first of all, is sort of why there was this much market turmoil. I think there was a little bit of psychology as well, because clearly scrapping the, let's put it this way, clearly making the rich richer is not necessarily a good way to get out of this crisis, albeit it is the sort of, well, it's a parody of what the Conservatives might do, but unfortunately they have actually done that. Reversing it sort of, I think, has the positive psychological effect that the markets are now thinking, well, actually, maybe these guys are not digging in and doubling down, and maybe Liz Truss is somebody who's not completely obstinate, but may actually be somebody who's learning on the job and who will actually start issuing economic policy, or let me say, encouraging fiscal policy, which is not in direct contrast to monetary policy, because that was the issue here. So I like this U-turn because of all these things. Psychological, the government may not be completely obstinate. The markets are taking encouragement from that, I believe. And we've seen the market turmoil coming, well, calming visibly in response to this.
I must say, I think that the memoirs that will be coming out inevitably in sort of 10, 20 years' time would be quite interesting to sort of look back on what the actual conversations were. And no doubt at that point, you know, Netflix 2.0 will be doing some kind of, you know, costume drama about it. But anyway,
like The Big Short, that movie.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, and actually indeed, what's the thing at the moment, the This Is England, isn't it?
Yes,
that's on, I think it's on Sky.
It's moment, isn't it? I don't know, we've downloaded it.
Exactly, isn't it? Spooky.
It's like 10 minutes after the bloke left office.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I mean, I think that was good. I think it's they had to do that. I mean, the fact that they even mentioned it in the first place was just ridiculous. So I'm glad that, you know, I am like you, like yourself, I am glad that that happened. And it's interesting, like you say, that's kind of one of the only things really in that raft of mini budget stuff that they actually went back on. And it seems to have calmed things down, doesn't it? I mean, that's quite cheap. It's quite a cheap way of, you know, winning things back a bit.
Exactly. That's why I thought that there was, first of all, in the market turmoil, and now in the easing of it, a lot of psychology as well. Because I think that the 45% scrapping of the top rate of tax would have sort of cost the government something like 2 billion, maybe 5, which is nothing in the grand scheme of things. So in reverse, you could say that now we have 2 or 5 billion pounds less in spending coming into the markets, if you want to look at it simplistically. Now, that in itself is not going to cause any major impact in the economy. And that is why I think that the markets are taking comfort in the fact that the government isn't completely obstinate in this. And of course, I'm talking about Liz Truss, who has got a reputation for being maybe not the most flexible person listening to advisors. But you're right. A cynic would say, well, this is the cheapest thing they can do, basically, in reverse. You say, okay, we reverse this and now we get on, which is why I would not be surprised to see further U-turns or policies which ease or attenuate some of the pressure on the economy in the budget, which I believe is coming out on the 23rd of November. I believe that's the publication.
I mean, yes, that's right. And I think, you know, Kwarteng has said that he's going to be coming out with the more details on the financing of the measures that have been announced already. He was going to announce it then. He's going to announce them before. So probably a few late nights, a few extra late nights than he was planning on. But
you I'm know, sure there is an adage in the city which says bad numbers take longer to add up.
Right. Okay.
And
nice. Well, I've not heard that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty much guessing that this is currently going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
By the way, what also is going on behind the scenes, no doubt, is lots more pressure, not just from the Bank of England, but also from the pension funds in this country. They will have been all over quoting in the government on this. So I'm not surprised to see this downturn. I would expect further down. downturns are everywhere. U-turns is what I'm talking about.
Some sort of turn.
Some
left
sort of turn.
Right turn, up turn,
whatever.
Down turn. Yeah, no, I see. Anyway, no, cool. So that's very, very good. And actually, you know, again, talking of U-turns and moving on to trust. I mean, I thought that was a very interesting thing that she reversed the reversal.
Yes.
Of Boris Johnson's cutting of a part of the Northern Powerhouse Rail project, which I think is interesting because, you know, I was saying to you earlier that when I must say that when the HS2 stuff came out, I thought that's a good, you know, that's in theory, it's a good idea because it brings North and South closer together and it should help business overall. But then we went into lockdown. And then I thought, that's a bit, you know, this is a bit, the further we went into lockdown, the more I thought, actually, do we need HS2 now? Because we can do things remotely. And so, you know, then when I was just thinking about that, that's when this other bit of news came out. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think this is a good thing. In terms of PR, I would have thought, and it's going to bring things back a bit, in the sense that those in the North that were disgruntled by Boris Johnson's kind of plans to actually walk back on what he was originally going to do. So the fact that Truss is walking back his walk back is probably going to be received relatively well in the North, although obviously the talk of how much it's going to cost is still a problem given what's going on at the moment.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. This is the double reversal of
the reversal
plans
of the reversal.
To scrap something. No,
360, if you will.
A double reversal of the plans to build something. And it's beginning very difficult to understand where we now are. The governments in this country are beginning to look
dizzy.
It's dizzy, like a spinning top. By, you know, absolutely, quite dizzy. Dizzy we may be, but we are back at where we started, too.
Exactly. I was actually I've got a swivel chair here. I was going to try and do a sort of a physical representation of that.
Could you?
I can't really because... Although the room looks reasonably okay from this camera point of view, you don't know what's around here.
I can do that too. I can do that too.
Very good.
Anyway, guys, so back in the room, dizzy, yes, we are dizzy. But the thing is, interestingly, that I still think that infrastructure products of this nature are necessary. Yes, I hear you on this, and I believe you're absolutely right. The pandemic has taught us that we can actually do a lot more stuff productively online than we thought we were going to do before the pandemic struck and taught us by necessity that this is in fact possible. But also I think we've seen in the pandemic that we need human contact. I've just been in the city today. I wouldn't say it's back to normal, but certainly people are streaming back into the office. There's even an abbreviation for this now. There used to be WFH, working from home. Now it's BTO, back to office. Okay. So you see, there was that other one,
the acronym that refers to people going to work on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. But we can't really say that on this.
No, we can't.
On this
but
show.
People can put the first letters of this together and see what comes out.
Yes.
And so, yes. So I think human contact is absolutely indispensable. The other thing, of course, we need to sort of, remember, this is not new news. The government has finally sort of understood this as well. We call it leveling up, which is just simply the fact that not all regions in the UK are equally economically structured and have equal economic wealth. And me, of course, as a German guy who came to the UK 30 years ago, I almost noticed immediately.
But when you were two, it's amazing.
Yeah, okay. Moving on.
Yeah, yeah.
I was amazed at the structural imbalances in this country. And it has always bothered me that the Southeast and England and maybe the home counties were so much more prosperous than other regions in the UK. That cannot be good, well, for the economy, obviously, but also for a society. And so I think that leveling up is an important process. We also need to remember that it's not just services which are important in the economy. There are also goods, and yes, there are only to some extent freight lines intended here. But it is important, I think, that the constant flow of human capital across the country is encouraged, is possible, because then we will see gradually some other important regions in this country, which are around historical important towns like York, for example, Manchester, etc., spring to fruition, reduce the imbalances regionally, and just make society and the economy stronger. I firmly believe it. So, yes, I hear you. Probably not as much required as pre-pandemic, but still a very important initiative, which I'm very happy that the government has done a double U-turn on. Brilliant. And it's back on.
There you go. So, I guess, I mean, going from that U-turn to another U-turn, really, which is about Elon Musk. And the fact that he wanted to take over Twitter, and then he said, actually, I don't want to take over Twitter because there are too many bots. And now he's saying, actually, I do want to buy Twitter. Cynically, I would say that is evidence of the lawyers involved in the transaction doing an amazing job in terms of drafting the contract to make it more watertight than. Actually, I can't think of anything that I can say on here, but basically very, very watertight. So that he is now, I mean, it looks to me, so I'm being cynical here. I think he's framing this as a positive, like, okay, he's gone from what is he doing? So, he's taking over Twitter. How exciting, to, oh my God, what is he doing? He's trying to get out of it, or he's trying to lower the price, to, oh my God, he's taking them to court. And then, oh my God, he's now coming back. And he's changed that narrative really quickly to, wow, he's making a super app. And so, yeah, I mean, what's your take on this, Ralph?
I am dizzy, I think is the word. Dizzy again. I don't really know what to think of this. I know that Musk is a bit of an erratic or mercurial character, perhaps. And I've said before on this show many times that I think he's a genius, and genii cannot, can by definition not be measured by the average benchmarks, which applies to all of us or to most of us. But yeah, I don't know. I never quite understood why he wanted to buy Twitter in the first place. I mean, he's on record for saying that Twitter, I paraphrase this, is like the Greek agora, the marketplace where human societies in a modern way come together and have exchanges. Well, if you look at Twitter, I mean, you can't go three statements into any kind of thread and people call you stupid or something. It's not exactly that. I don't know, but he will have had some intention. I don't know what his original intention was.
Maybe cutting... it was to put in an edit button. Most people go, oh God, I wish it had an edit button, but it doesn't, and we get on with our lives. But if maybe you're Elon Musk, you think, oh, I really want an edit button. Do you know what? I think I'm going to buy the company and, I'll put one in.
It looks like he edited his original motivation pretty nicely.
I like what you did there. Yeah, pretty good.
But I want to add some value to this comment, but I don't really know how to. I think what I would like to focus on is rather where we are now rather than how we might have got here, because I just simply don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
What we now see is that Musk, rightly or wrongly, intentionally or not, or as an afterthought, has basically said that he wishes to use Twitter as a platform on which to build a super app.
Mm.
And super apps are not really present in the free world, in the West and in the US, but they are present in China, where things like WeChat are a sort of a one-stop shop for all your needs. And I've heard this before, and I like the concept in general as a concept. I just wonder to which extent a Western consumer might wish to have it. And of course, I haven't done any market research here, but if you just look at myself, I don't know. I mean, I still remember the debacle of Facebook they got embroiled in with Cambridge Analytics, and I've learned to be suspicious of platforms who own too much of my data in ways in which I cannot control, which I do not know how they do it, where the data might end up, and obviously it might, at least in my psychology as a consumer, it might ease the transfer of data between users of this data, if all of the various users are subsumed in one platform. And what's the utility which I'm getting from this? I mean, I'm obviously not a tech entrepreneur, which is why I may well be missing this. But if I book a restaurant, do I need the utility to maybe book an Uber in that same app? Would I pay the restaurant using that same app? It's all getting a little bit if you're a programmer, you talk about convoluted commands. Everything is in one command. It's very concise. Everything is in one thing. And that is what I think about this. It's at least unclear to me whether this would catch on as much as Elon Musk appears to think.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I personally don't think it will happen. I think that there's a couple of reasons for that. I think the first reason is that, in my opinion, WeChat was allowed to grow pretty much unencumbered, in China. And I think that, had the same kind of things happened over here, I would have thought regulators and things would have got involved at an earlier stage to say, hey, what are you doing here? You're getting too powerful in terms of your market share, you know, that sort of thing. And the other thing as well, another point is that, and this, you know, this does sound a bit paranoid, but, you know, maybe the government, Chinese government, allowed it to develop because actually having a one-stop shop app is very useful for them, because they can basically, spy on individuals a lot more easily if you've got all your apps connected. So there's that aspect as well. And then I suppose the third thing is that elsewhere, there are more competitors in terms of the apps that are kind of within WeChat. So if Twitter were to try to become a super app, it would have to sign up all these other apps to have the same kind of functionality. But at the same time, would the other apps really want to sign up with Twitter? Because they would essentially be signing up to their opposition. So, you know, again, I think it's very difficult. And then the other alternative, of course, is for Twitter to build its own functionality, but that costs loads of money and takes loads of time.
Yeah.
So I think it's unlikely, and I think that it's a case of him just trying to divert attention away from the fact that he couldn't get out of his contract.
That may be. I mean, I have to admit, I don't not know enough about the technological capabilities of this of apps to know, but at least in theory, there's one thing which it might be interesting to build, which is an app that acts as a platform for other apps in a similar way as Amazon acts as a platform for smaller companies which are selling through Amazon Marketplace. But I think even that is already possible. I mean, Apple, for example, provides a very fecund, very, very profitable platform for app development. And so I don't think that is necessarily a positive reason to develop a super app either. But like I said, Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. He's the tech god.
I will
watch it with interest what's going to happen.
Indeed. Well, there we go. I think we'll wrap it up on that point. I'll just leave you with the thought that tomorrow. So this is Friday today that we're recording this. I'm going to an Oktoberfest, which I'm kind of slightly embarrassed about. I mean, obviously, Ralph knows the real thing. I'm going to Oktoberfest in Guildford, which is going to be interesting. I went last year. I did an impromptu Instagram live, which turned out to be a lot more popular than I had anticipated. involved me singing with a load of beer, walking back to the bar. I mean, who knows?
That is pretty much what is going on at the Oktoberfest. Yeah. I want everybody to know that in anticipation of this, I'm wearing lederhosen today, which, of course, you can't see. And the other thing is what you do say when you go to the real thing is in a poorly imitated Bavarian accent, "Ons zwar Xufa," and this means one, two, well, knock back. And what you do is you take the stein, you hammer it onto the table like a maniac. Most of the beer is fluffing about all over the place. Then you drink what's left. And it's a very cultured affair, as you can see.
Yes, yes. So, yes, of course, I shall be reporting from that tomorrow, potentially. Anyway, but there we go. So thank you very much indeed, Ralph. Brilliant as always. And we'll be back again next week.
Next week. Cool.
Many thanks.
Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Bye.